At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
And I was like, this looks like the beginning of a joke. An African-American and a Native American walk up to a press conference.
And then the New York Post ran with that headline.
And then the New York Post freaking stole my joke. Look, they put it on their front page.
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin, because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense. Hey, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Mercedes, and I am here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
Look at us. It's daytime. We have emerged from under the blankets. Well, I actually slept in because we weren't going to record in the morning, and I was actually very excited.
It was really nice. I'm like, I could get used to this. This is great.
So our schedules allow today for us to record in the afternoon. This is our goal, okay? This is what we're shooting for. Right now we're doing the video. If you're listening to this and you are not a paying supporter, the video is going to be available on our Substack for paying supporters, but it is going to be coming out eventually to everyone once we get infrastructure and situations dealt with. So, but I mean, if you want to support us, now is the time, okay? So what are we going to talk about today? All right. Well, first, I forgot. I'm kind of discombobulated because this is a whole new situation, right?
I know. It's not 6 o'clock. We're not running on pure adrenaline.
You would think I would be able to actually function, and no. So if this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button so you don't miss another episode. We are here every Tuesday and Thursday. And what are we talking about today? We're talking about Trump firing the head of Bureau. It's Bureau of Labor and Statistics. Here we go, BLS. He's claiming because they're fudging the numbers. There's a lot of discussion about that. Of course, you know, others are saying that this is him throwing a fit.
Mm-hmm.
We'll give you the entire rundown. Also, the DOJ has decided to open a grand jury probe into the origins of the Russiagate /hoax. That's a new update. Texas Democrats are on the run from Texas. And they're hiding out, I think, in Illinois and New York. So many
questions about this, because I've only looked into it just a little bit. And I'm like, wait, are they never coming home?
We're going to get into it. Okay. I actually wrote an entire article yesterday about it because I think there's other aspects to this that a lot of people aren't talking about.
Okay.
So if you guys want to read more into it, which things that we're not probably not going to get to in this episode, it is on my personal Substack. It's Mercedes. You guys can go check it out there. And then finally, Elizabeth Warren and Mamdani did a press conference together. And, you know, we just have some thoughts about that. So hopefully we will have time to hit on that. She's shaking. People
I'm
are
already
actually
rolling
seeing
my eyes. Yeah, everybody's going to be able to see all that happens right here when you tell me what's happening in the world. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's start first with this job numbers discussion. It's not the most exciting, but it is relevant because there's a lot of narrative and a lot of debate going on. And I think it's actually a pretty nuanced conversation. So we're going to start off with the jobs report drama. After not great July job report numbers, that was actually staggered down by 258,000. Okay,
that's a
so
lot.
They did a revision.
That's a big miss when you have
humongous
to revise down. Yeah, and this hasn't happened in other administrations. There's always a little bit of a downward revision, but not often.
This is the most significant in 50 years.
Yeah, this is not common that it's this. I mean, what was it, a 90% miss? When I saw those numbers, I was like, this has got to be a mistake. And it was. a big one.
Well, Trump had some thoughts about it, specifically when it came to the Commissioner of Bureau Labor and Statistics, which is also referred to as the BLS. And her name is Erica McIntarfer.
That's what I'm going to go with. McIntarfer.
Oh, gosh. I am so bad with unfamiliar names. It's embarrassing.
They know. They know. Okay.
Yes. All right. But let's go ahead and listen to the president and see what he had to say on the subject.
Why did you fire the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics?
Because I think her numbers were wrong. Just like I thought her numbers were wrong before the election. Days before the election, she came out with these beautiful numbers for Kamala. I guess Biden slash Kamala. And she came out with these beautiful numbers trying to get somebody else elected. Then right after the election, I think on the 15th, November 15th, she had an $800,000 or $900,000 massive reduction. Said she made a mistake. No, that woman's numbers.
All right. Okay. So, update, or like, let's just kind of set the stage. Before the numbers that he is talking about that she issued before the election, I think like was like 800,000 new jobs created, something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And then after the election, they saw a reduction, okay. Right? Then this last one, it looked like we, again, good numbers. I remember we actually were talking about them. Yeah. Awesome, great numbers. A lot of times there are revisions. We expect that. So from May to June, jobs were overestimated, like I mentioned at the top, 258,000. Biggest adjustment in 50 years. Okay. Now, Trump is making the argument, which I'm not surprised. He's making the argument that this is politics, that she released numbers early because, you know, it would look good for the administration, and then they had to make adjustments and they waited until after the election. So everybody understands, I researched this because actually Rachel and I were talking, like when these numbers came out, we were talking on a text thread with a friend of the podcast, Amanda Peterson. If you guys have been here for a minute, you know who we're talking about. And we were all like, all three of us were like, what is going on here? Right. Because there has been consistent revisions, but the revisions have been, like, as I mentioned, this is the most significant in 50 years. Mm-hmm. And so there's a big question of, like, is this politics or is it because the BLS has an antiquated process in figuring out what the labor numbers are? And I think it would really matter because these labor numbers, like, determine how many businesses, how the economy decides to invest. It can make a difference even at the Fed, whether or not they decide to make adjustments to the interest rate. So having an accurate number really matters. And Trump is claiming that it's politics. And then others are claiming that this is just the way it is. And I think it's actually somewhere in the middle. And specifically, there was a really interesting interview that I'm going to share here before I want to get your thoughts from the CEO of Bank of America, where he talks specifically on the subject of whether or not what we're really doing here or is an issue of an antiquated system versus it actually being politics.
Friday, the president fired, as you know, the head statistician that comes up with these jobs numbers and presents them to the public. The former head during the first Trump administration came out in her defense and said this is without merit and it undermines credibility of data. Are you concerned by this firing and do you feel there is political pressure here?
Well, I think that's more politics, and I know I'm in Washington, D.C., and that's what we're supposed to talk about.
But the reality is the data.
It's 2025, and the data should be able to be. They use surveys and things like that, which, frankly, just aren't as effective anymore. So if you look at the rate of people who respond to their surveys, it's down from 60% level to 50% level. You know, we don't use surveys as aggressively. We watch what consumers really do. We watch what businesses really do. They can get this data, I think, other ways. And I think that's where the focus ought to be. How do we get the data to be more resilient and more predictable and more understandable? Because what bounces around is restatements. And that was one of the largest restatements going back 5 or 7 years into the pandemic, five years in the pandemic. That creates doubt around it. And so I think the key is let's spend some money. Let's bring the information together. Let's find where else in the government money is reported. We report millions and millions of data points to the government every day. The data is out there somewhere.
So what are you seeing on the discussions about this?
Well, I think it is, and look, I'm not a statistician. I don't even pretend to understand what these people do on a daily basis to gather this data. But to me, I think it's a two-pronged issue. And I know you and I and Amanda talked about this as well. I think it not only has to do with outdated systems. I mean, the government having outdated systems is not exclusive to the BLS. Doge brought up the fact that there were lots of computer, lots of the technology
like
inside
different computer systems that couldn't communicate with each other.
The technology being used is old and it's antiquated. And so I think they're probably dealing with that within the BLS and how they've always gathered numbers. It's just kind of like, this is how we've always done it. And to change an entire system takes time. It takes money. It takes innovation. It takes new people coming in, maybe replacement, and people aren't comfortable with that. So they've probably just been using the same model for so long. They're used to it and they need something new. And then secondly, something that I didn't initially think of, but I think you or Amanda did, was we're in a very interesting, unique spot right now where we're having a changing demographic as it pertains to immigration. And so wouldn't it make sense that these numbers would be affected right now, specifically because of the mass deportations that we're seeing, people maybe not going to their place of work because out of fear of deportation? Could that be affecting these numbers with the large scale deportations and large scale push we're seeing for illegal immigrants to leave the country? I think it totally could be affecting it. And so it's kind of like a perfect storm, in my opinion. Is that the answer and the reason? I don't know, but it definitely seems plausible that we're dealing with outdated systems in the government.
In the midst of a complete revamping of the labor.
Overhaul of our immigration. Yeah. Well, the labor market. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, not only is it because there were also other stats that came up that this is actually the most significant amount of job growth for native-born Americans and in the private sector. As opposed to when it was the Biden administration, their largest growth was foreign-born or illegals. Yep. And it was predominantly, the most growth was also in the federal system. Mm-hmm. Now, also remember that we had a whole bunch of firings or layoffs or ends of programs, however you want to put it, within the federal government, in addition to having to deal with the fact that we're seeing a revamp of the labor market because either illegal migrants have been deported or because they have self-deported, or like you said, maybe they're just not appearing anymore. Especially, right. I don't know if California implemented the system yet, but like Mayor Bass was proposing a program where they would just give money to illegal migrants who were unable or afraid to go to work so they can still pay for groceries and because they've been negatively affected because they can't go into work.
That
Do you not remember that like a few weeks
no,
ago?
No, I don't remember it, but it tracks. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it was like a big deal because they were going to use California taxpayer funds, and then they were going to issue it to organizations like CHRLA, and then CHRLA was then going to distribute it to illegal migrants in need.
Of course.
Yep. Because they're not able to go to work because they're afraid that ICE is going to deport them. I mean,
because they're here illegally, because that's what happens. Anywho.
Exactly. So I think the problem here is if we're going to talk about, because we often talk about like the political aspect of this or the narrative aspect. Look, Trump does stuff that no other president before him has done on a daily basis. This being one of them. I don't even remember, like, when was the last time someone from the BLS, a commissioner?
Well, when was the last time anyone even cared?
Cared.
You know what it is, though, honestly, with Trump? I'm not bothered that he fired her. I'm sure she is. But I'm not bothered because that's what executives have the power to do. They can rework their executive branch however they'd like. They have the power to do that. I don't think anybody can make an argument against that. But what it is to me is it's like, he just kind of got ticked. And he's like, what can I do? Okay, I can fire her. I'll do that. It, as opposed to, I don't think he likes to take a beat and actually think about it and go, well, maybe, let me just think about it. That probably wasn't necessarily her fault. Maybe it is. I don't know. But it just seems to me it's just something he can do to, as a reaction to these numbers happening to him because they weren't great. And that's very Trump. That's just...
Well, I think one of the problems here, though, that I could potentially see is, like, let's say he bring... Okay, he hires or they bring in another commissioner. Mm-hmm. And then miraculously, this commissioner comes out with good numbers.
Yeah, I know.
What does that look like? Are people going to trust
those
numbers?
Or is he going to just, like, he's going to come in and be like, yeah, those numbers were pretty spot on. Is he going to fire that guy, too? Who's on the short list, by the way? I heard them say that Bessent was not going to be on it. They
so
had
Bessent, well, Bessent was being considered for the Fed, and they had a discussion today, and he says he's not interested. He wants to stay where he is, which thank you very much.
Which thank you, because he's doing great. Yeah.
Yes. Like, please stay. He's... you guys all know he's like one of my favorites in the cabinet.
Mercedes,
to say that the Treasury Secretary is one of your favorites is one of the weirdest things.
Well, it's just nerdy. It's just nerdy. It's just there's no other way of putting it.
He's just, I just really like the dude. Okay.
It would be interesting to see what happens when the new person comes in. If they're like, yeah, her numbers are accurate. What, I mean, is he just going to keep firing someone until they come in and give him something he wants? Because that's not great either. Like,
well, I think the best thing that could happen, if somebody new were to come in, is that they come in and they start to explain to people, this is how it's been done. Yes. This is why it doesn't work. And this is what we're going
to
do instead.
We're going to revamp it and bring it up to date. So this is not a continual problem.
Yeah. There was another discussion that I saw on Squawk Box where it's not
on what?
Just Squawk Box.
What is Squawk Box?
It's...
What is that?
Do you never watch CNBC?
I'm sorry, I don't. But what is it?
It's a program with John Kernan where he talks
about... I thought it was an app, like Blue Sky or something.
No. I'm talking about like on television. Anyways, let me play it. So, because he gives a pretty good explanation of what he sees. Do I not have it? Are you freaking kidding me? Of course. Of course. It's not here. The point being, John Kernan was pointing out that one of the major issues that is happening isn't just the fact that they're using antiquated programs, for example, or systems. For example, what they do is they send out a survey and then you wait for the business to return the survey. And then they send in their numbers. And it's that discrepancy and the time period and not meeting those deadlines that's part of the problem. In addition, he actually shared, which is what the CEO of Bank of America mentioned, that the amount of businesses that are actually filling out this survey, it has dropped significantly. And it's like the same pattern, which we shouldn't be surprised because it's the same pattern that we've seen with polling when it came to the elections.
A lot
of people don't want to do polling anymore. They don't want to answer questions. And specifically, they were pointing out in a debate here, or not a debate, they're having this discussion on the issue where they need to create some kind of system of enforcement where the businesses have to report these numbers and they have to do them on time.
Okay,
that's
so
the other issue.
This is what else strikes me. And look, if you guys follow me online or my Substack, you know that I am not a fan of artificial intelligence, right? This, I know. But it's so funny to me that for a White House that is majoring so hard on AI and its use in like all the different sectors and departments of the federal government, that BLS is like working with data that some guy in HR is filling out a survey, maybe sending it in late, maybe the numbers
machine probably. Yeah.
And I'm like, what is going on? They're implementing AI everywhere where they're like, we're going to have the best, the brightest, the fastest information ever, except for our labor numbers. Those are going to be like from 1985.
To be like devil's advocate, like I think probably what's happened is that it's like you don't realize there's a problem until it starts to affect you and it upsets you. And Trump, when he gets affected negatively by something.
He's upset. He's upset right now.
He's going to react. That's what he does. Now, you know, you can criticize the reaction. It gives an obnoxious narrative, of course. Like, again, they're like, well, now he's going to cook the books. This is an authoritarian move, you know, yada, yada. But also at the same time, there is a extensive record of the
like labor numbers coming in at a certain number and then having to be revised down.
Oh, yeah. Mind every administration.
And then I don't necessarily think it's crazy to think maybe there's some political aspect, because remember in 2023, the annual revision showed 800,000 jobs overestimated under Biden.
Yikes.
It's like, oh, just, you know, by the way, we're going to throw out this number that looks like we're doing swell right before, you know,
an election.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. I just like, I think there could be a little bit of a political aspect. Like, if I was going to stare at, look, should I? I don't know. The commissioner didn't look like she's on the Trump train. I'm just saying.
I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing.
I see it.
She looked like Rachel Maddow's cousin. Like, let's just be honest. Like, that's.
You said it.
Not to judge a book by its cover.
But you're gonna.
I am. A little bit. I don't know. But the point being, regardless of the politics, if there were any potential politics, I don't even think that matters because of the fact that the system is clearly a problem and it's flawed.
Yes.
So I don't know. We'll continue to see. But when people come and say that this is him being authoritarian again, this is him trying to cook the books or whatever.
No, I think it's just him being reactionary. And he doesn't like things that reflect negatively. So this is his way of like temporarily solving it. And then we'll see what happens when this new guy or gal comes in. Who knows?
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Speaking of how the media likes to report things, the DOJ announced yesterday that they were going to be ordering evidence to be presented before a grand jury in regards to the Trump-Russia gate hoax fiasco that we've all been following, at least, and I've been writing about on my Substack. And so it broke news yesterday. However, just so you guys understand, that a grand jury, presenting evidence to a grand jury, does not mean anything yet. In other words, it doesn't mean anybody's going to be indicted yet. It doesn't mean any kind of criminal charges
yet.
This is highly, highly unlikely is going to involve anyway Obama, because he has presidential immunity. My guess, if I were to speculate, what they're doing is specifically on Brennan and Comey, perhaps Clapper, which was FBI, CIA, and Clapper, I believe, was he DOD? I can't remember off the top of my head.
Do you think that they'll call in Hillary Clinton?
I mean, it's possible. It's even possible that they could. The thing is, I don't even think they could bring in for questioning Obama per se.
Yeah, he was the DNI.
Clapper DNI. There we go. I was like, I knew he was a D something. So I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if they brought in Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
The problem here is that Hillary Clinton there's a big issue here of statute of limitations. Mm-hmm. And it's trying to figure out at what point is the anchor of the last cover up, like action to cover up what was happening and create a conspiracy.
Yeah.
One of the things that the grand jury would have to figure. But grand juries are closed. Like, we're not going to get any information. Even if, like, let's say the grand jury decides to indict, it is possible that the DOJ can decide that they won't be able to win a case or there isn't enough to win a case, and they may not pursue prosecution. So that is possible too, which would create a ton of frustration for a lot of people. So I think politically, this is actually a pretty big gamble for Bondi. But what I thought was funny is, of course, the mainstream media, for the most part, legacy media, let's say, hasn't really been wanting to cover the story
at all.
And at all. In fact, I would say that they are annoyed by it. You have to see. I really want your reaction on this report from NBC, because you can tell that they are annoyed. And in so many words, they're telling you, please don't pay attention to this because it's a problem for us. That's what I think it is.
Yeah, they're complicit. They know it.
It's like, I think it's a problem for us.
A couple of weeks ago, Hallie, when really the headlines were dominated by the Jeffrey Epstein controversy, and then the president was sort of trying to change the topic very obviously and in many different venues, was trying to bring up these unsubstantiated claims about the role he argues former President Obama had in the 2016 election and trying to suppress some information that he says would have been damaging if it had come to light. And so then you have the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, come to the White House briefing room, come to the podium and try to share some of this alleged new evidence. Well, now you have the Attorney General saying that they're going to try to take that information, which, remember, they had announced a strike force to look into what they call this new evidence and try to evaluate it to see if there could be any potential criminal indictments that they would follow. And the thing that matters here is that this is basically a grand jury investigation that's being launched, but that will happen in secret. This is behind closed doors, and it's completely unclear whether it will yield anything new. It's unclear that we will ever learn anything new about it because it could be under seal, but it really does bear repeating. This is looking into something for which there is no evidence to back it up, and it's really, it seems, a politically motivated move to keep the focus on one of the president's clear political foes and talk about basically anything else.
Okay, so she's right from the beginning. She's like,
this is a news reporter, by the way. This is a White House correspondent with NBC. This isn't. Right.
This is not surprising to us because this is journalism. Now, this is what passes for journalism in so many areas. But she's just like, it's just some. She literally said, like, it's some information, just some stuff. What do you mean, just some stuff? And then when she's like, it's clear that there's nothing there. This is all political. It's like, this is your job. Your job is to read. How do you know? That is wild to me.
Yep.
And she gets paid to do that. We don't get paid at all to do our due diligence and actually read the documents. That's crazy.
Well, then she goes and she says, and just so you know, this grand jury is in secret behind closed doors.
Yeah, she was basically like, so why even do it? We're not going to learn anything.
Jury is in secret behind closed doors.
New to her. This is new to her.
I love how she points that out as if this is some nefarious strategy to make it look like there's
she's banking on people to be as uneducated as she is. And probably, if you're watching,
she's not uneducated. She's just being manipulative.
Well, I guess uneducated in a sense, but yeah, you're right.
I saw that report.
That bothers me.
I was pretty full. Like, there are moments, and I continue to be surprised that I'm surprised because I'm why is this surprising to me? There were so many caveats in there. Just so you know, there's no evidence. We may not see anything.
It's just
some private
stuff
behind closed doors. It's just some stuff that's unverified. Let me tell you, I've been digging through. Like, one of the things that I noticed, and I did a comparison about this. So I actually, thank goodness for AI, because otherwise I would have had to have read a 300-page plus report in order to find this. But
like the good old days.
I am a one-woman show here. I don't have time to dig through 300 pages to find one little factoid that I need to find. So one of the things, this is all about the Brennan report, right? Sorry, not Brennan. The Durham report. Mm-hmm. Durham was the special investigator that was looking into this and found a bunch of violations and poor practices from the FBI specifically. But then there were other things.
We just found some stuff.
But then there were other things that he wasn't 100% positive of. And because legally, as a special investigator, you can't indict people. Like, they have a discretion. And so they can't recommend criminal charges, or they can't indict people if they're not 100% sure that they can actually, like, pursue those charges, right? Now, in the report, there was a section where it alluded, it gave you some information about the Danish intelligence having, that Russia hacked the emails of a Democrat think tank, which turned out to be Open Society, which is a George Soros.
Soros-backed.
Correct. Organization. So the Russians allegedly hacked them, gained access to emails, and the Dutch, this Dutch intelligence group, was watching over their shoulder while they were compiling the reports. Like, literally, they have a camera watching them while they're compiling the reports. And then those reports, which were in Russian, were then taken by the Dutch and given to U.S. intelligence, who then translated it back into English for this investigation. Okay, so that's kind of like the workaround there. One of the things that was not in the Durham report that was first released were the fact was the fact that there were interviews that were conducted of Clinton, of Bernardo, which is the guy with Open Society, with Anthony Sullivan, which ended up being He was Secretary of State for Biden. There's also a few other individuals. The annex that was recently released provides those interviews there. And when you read those interviews, which I cover in my article, it's kind of like telling that it's, they kind of go like, well, that doesn't look like something I would say, but I could have said this. And Hillary Clinton's like, well, that sounds like Russian disinformation to me. I'm like, no kidding, Sherlock. Of course you would say that.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of aspects in this interview. And that's just part of what the annex includes, which provides a whole lot more context.
Which is why the New York Times came out over the weekend. Yeah. The New York Times came out and said, well, there's really nothing there. And we think that the annex is basically all like put together by Russian spies. So, bye.
Okay. So there was actually one thing about the emails specifically that kind of, to me, was, it's a very small thing that nobody else has kind of picked up on that I thought was very telling and actually kind of spoke to the fact that, yeah, they were compiled by Russian spies, but they were compiled from actual emails.
Yeah.
So, for example, there is a line from Bernardo who is emailing Clinton's campaign people. I think it was Juliana, but I can't remember. Anyways, in the email, he uses a phrase, the email uses a phrase of fuel into the fire in regards to the FBI, being given, you know, more materials, and hopefully they'll run with it and they'll push the story of Trump and Russia colluding, or at least Russia wanting Trump to win, right?
Yeah.
And then I had this up because in the interview, he says, I wouldn't say fuel into the fire. And I started, and he goes, but the end sentence, there was like another sentence at the end that I can't remember at the top of my head. He's like, but I would probably say something like that. And then I started to think, like, fuel into the fire. No, oil. Sorry. Oil into the fire. That's what it was. Oil into the fire.
Fuel the fire. So why would... So
correct.
He just said,
so I'm thinking what probably happened is that in the process of all of this Google
translation. Yep.
Oil is actually fuel. And so he can honestly say, I would never say oil into the fire.
Yeah. But he knows that
most
Americans
fuel to the fire. Fuel into the fire. Yeah. Fuel on the fire or something.
He's able to cover himself. Yeah.
So it's like little, there's little details and little nuggets like that in this annex that none of the press, the legacy media, is reporting on. Yeah. And of course, you know, the independent media is talking about other larger aspects of it. But I think the annex especially, and there's a link to the annex in my, on my Substack article. Like, it's only 43 pages. I think it's worth a read, especially when you keep hearing these people like the New York Times and others trying to claim that there's nothing there. I'm not even saying that we can definitively say, I mean, I think they did, but, you know, it's a question of evidence. And can we definitively say that they meddled, you know, that's up to a jury to determine or whether or not that even gets there. Mm-hmm. But I think to just be like this chick from the NBC going like,
it's all political. That's the talking point for anything that happens that you don't like. Oh, well, it's politically motivated. So it doesn't matter. Obviously, they're making it up. They just want to negatively impact our campaign. And yeah, they do want to negatively impact your campaign, but not all negative things that come out about your party are simply motivated by politics. They also can be motivated by the need and desire for justice, which is obviously something we should all want. But they're going to use that to their advantage, that argument, that line of argument.
She just seemed really annoyed too, that like,
well, she even had to report on it.
Well, did she even have to report on it? And initially she definitely sets it up as like, you know, just so you're a reminder, we were actually talking about Epstein at the time. And then, you know, they came out with this, which I think is a valid like concern. You know, you would be unfair to not consider that.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that there's nothing worth investigating when it comes to Russiagate.
Well, we can talk about two things at one time. We can talk about Epstein and we can talk about this. So,
do you know, I found this clip. I should share it with you. I found this clip of the New York Times celebrating and patting themselves on the back because they won Pulitzer Prizes on this amazing reporting that they have done.
Show it. Do you have the clip?
I do.
Let's
remarkable watch. Tribute to the newsroom at the peak of its energy and creativity. You all have won 3 Pulitzer Prizes this year.
I'm so proud.
On January 19th of last year, we wrote a story about an ongoing federal investigation into the campaign of the person who about 18 hours later was about to take the oath of office to become president. We didn't know then, and we don't know now, where this story will end. Mm. But it's been an honor to cover it with the people standing here. To our colleagues in the Bureau, a year and a half ago, you saw the storm coming.
Was that Maggie Haberman? That's Maggie Haberman in the front.
Yes.
Whenever I see her talk about Trump, she's just so deeply unhappy. It's
well, and just realize that they have received a Pulitzer Prize for their reporting, and they point out it's like we don't know where it's going to end when these reporters, these journalists, have during that entire time were constantly reporting about how Trump was about to get it. Like this is going to be the end. This the door, the windows, the walls are closing in on him. Mm-hmm. And they were very quick because what we're seeing, more likely than not, was that a lot of the information that they were reporting was news laundered through the campaign and through the intelligence community out over to the press for the intelligence community then to use it as a jumping board to then go and investigate Trump.
I don't want to be entirely skeptical about everybody in the news business, but man, would it have been amazing for there to be a handful of really curious journalists who are like, this just doesn't feel right to me, and actually followed their gut on it. I mean, they would have gotten fired or they would have been told, like, shut up. You're not.
Well, most of them are now on their own. I mean, yes. Matt Taibbi is the number. He's been following this story from the start. He was a lefty. He was a Bernie supporter. He used to write for Rolling Stone magazine. Yeah. And now he's on his own on Substack.
You got Schellenberger, who left. He's following this. Barry Weiss left. But there's just not enough. There's not enough curiosity anymore for these humongous outlets. I mean, it must be tired to be constantly consumed and obsessed with one singular political entity and to dedicate at this point over a decade of your life just being so angry about it and resisting anything that could be at all positive about his first or second term and just being fueled by that. It probably zaps these people of their curiosity and their creativity. I can't imagine
but I think too, one of the issues is that the public is fatigued. And so the public also isn't pushing to hear more of the story, because if if they were pushing to hear more of the story,
yeah,
I think eventually, you know, yeah, the legacy media would be slow to respond and they probably would report it like she reported it,
yes,
you know, on NBC, but it would be reported if it was a story that got eyes on, especially if it got eyes onto a show or into a program, mm-hmm. Which is why they were pushing it so hard back in, you know, 2018, 2017,
yeah.
You know, because that's, it's like, you know, what they say, if it bleed, it leads,
yeah.
You know, it was like, that was what was bringing people to come and watch the program.
But I got to be honest, I think even now, just the American citizenry is pretty fatigued when it comes to news in general. We have this onslaught of independent journalism, of which we're part of and proud to be. But when I personally report some of these stories, say, for instance, about like the Russia hoax or just these bombshell, truly, these are nation changing types of stories if they go in a certain direction. And people are like, yeah, sounds about right. Oh, well, I'll move on. When I speak to people who were witnessing something like a Watergate or the Vietnam War or what was happening on college campuses in the 70s, they are very descriptive in how consuming it was to the American public, how it was what you talked about at work. It was what you discussed at the kitchen table. It had a bit more gravitas than I feel like stories these days, even though they're enormous consequential stories. People are like, yeah, every story is consequential. We're living in a time of saturated information, and a lot of it seems really, really important. And so I think the American public,
it's hard to kind of weed through what to give your focus to. Back right. then, I mean, they had what, three news networks that they yeah. would give you right. the news, and then the local paper and a few nationwide publications. Mm-hmm. That was it. Everybody was reporting basically the same thing.
But I do feel like people, the nation felt like the stakes were higher. And so a lot of people felt like the stakes were higher. So things possibly felt more burdensome, more heavy, like they meant more. Where we're so fractured these days, I think people feel less like of a unity with their common like fellow countrymen, that it's like, well, yeah, that story happened, whatever. Is it gonna impact? I'm serious, because otherwise.
No, and I totally agree with you. And then for people like you and I, they're like, you know,
hello, pay attention. Like, hello! This is the big deal. This is the fire. The fire alarm is going off, and everybody's like, "Is it? Is it? I just bought my groceries and I took my kid to school. It's fine." So it's hard to kind of figure out where we're at. You know what I mean?
I don't blame them. You know where the Texas Democrats are not at?
Texas.
So, next story, we're going to talk about, so the Texas Democrats, this is not a new thing. There's a lot of discussion right now, especially because we're in the age of Trump and the Democrat opposition, and mm-hmm. you know, we got to, you know, they have to fight the authoritarian fascist Republicans, right?
Yes.
And they have to protect Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Because Texas is...
Otherwise, yeah. Trump's going to come in and him and Abbott are going to just...
It's going to be the end. It's going to be yeah. the end. So to give you an update of what's going on in Texas, this Texas state legislator, Texas state representatives have fled the state, and are most of them are in Illinois, but there are also some of them that are in New York. And the reason that they have fled the state is to prevent quorum from happening, because the Constitution of the state of Texas requires a certain number of people, of representatives, to be available to vote on a bill. Now, there's multiple things that have to be voted on during this session. One of them being aid for the victims of the flooding that happened in the Hill Country just, what was it, like a month ago? Not even a month ago?
Yeah.
So that's one of the things. But the other thing that also needs to be voted on is a redistricting map. And so this redistricting map, that's kind of a tongue tie there, would potentially give Republicans another 5 seats.
Yeah.
And that would also potentially affect our House of Representatives too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is a really big deal. And mind you, the Republicans, I'm sorry, not the Republicans, the Democrats are a minority in the Texas State House. And they have done this before, back in 2021, when Jasmine Crockett was a state representative.
Ah, Jasmine.
There was a voter integrity bill that was coming up on the floor for a vote. And they were like, no, this is all about voter suppression because you're not going to be able to do drive-through. You can't do mail-in. You can't do all of these things. Because I don't know, we kind of care to make sure that we know where the ballots are going. But right. They were very upset about that. Mm-hmm. And they bolted and went to D.C. So that was in 2021. Now, if history is to tell us anything, what's going to end up happening is that they're going to get fined a whole bunch. Eventually, they're going to have to come back home. The governor will do a special session, and they'll vote on it eventually, and those fines will get waived.
So I heard it was $500 a day. Yes. Why would they? You know what, though? Why waive the fines? Just do it so that we don't have to go through this rigmarole next time there's redistricting.
Because otherwise, who are you going to perform to? What performance are you going to give your people?
And it is just civil arrest, which probably will come to nothing. They're not going to actually toss him in jail, although that would just be spectacular. I just think it's ironic how when it's redistricting that doesn't benefit them, they're like all mad and hopping on aeroplanes to get out of the state. But like they can redistrict. Democrats, like totally. I shared on Dawn Dispatch this morning a map of redistricting that happened in Maryland in, I think, 2019. By Democrats. It was hilarious. So you've got the map and there's like the highlighted areas are what they redistrict to. So you've got like an area up here and then a little sliver that takes it all the way down here. Some area up here, a little bit in the middle. Like it's not a cohesive. They did
well,
it because
it's one of the biggest criticisms that they're getting right now. I actually have, let me see. Yeah, I have a map here of Illinois, which is the state that they have decided to go to.
Right.
I mean, look at this state.
Right. Okay.
You have a whole like snake that's running across the middle of the state.
It makes no sense. It makes no sense.
And the only parts that are Republican or red are like cornfields.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, it's when it works for you, it's totally permissible. It's for, you know, a good reason. It makes sense. It's advantageous for the voter. And then when it's someone else doing it, it's voter suppression. It's Jim Crow. It's a flashback to the 1960s when people didn't have rights to vote. That's, you know, it's performative and it's predictable.
They're saying a lot about how like the Republicans are trying to gerrymander the state of Texas. Mm-hmm. Now, just so you guys all understand what and why this is happening. So the Democrats will make it seem like, because this is a unique or time to decide to redistrict a state. Mm-hmm. Typically, there it's done with the census, so every 10 years. However, the last census in 2020, the Census Bureau admitted that they underestimated the count by enough where they think they undercounted, basically gypping the state of Texas 1 to 2 seats. Which would have made a big difference, especially in 2020.
Yep.
So they've admitted to that. Now, in addition to that, we've seen after post-COVID, we saw a great migration out of blue states into red states. Texas is one of the states that has seen the largest increase in population from states like New York, California, from other blue states who have come to Texas. Mm-hmm. So you have a situation where a state not only was undercounted during the last census, but then on top of that has had an influx of a brand new population to come to the state. And that is the reason that they are proposing a redistricting map at the midpoint of the census.
Yeah.
So it's 2025, we're like halfway in. And this is why Republicans are like, in order to not disenfranchise our new voters, because we have this new population and also the census undercounted, we need to reline our districts. In addition to that, we also need to consider that maybe race doesn't determine how you vote.
Well, I mean, 2024 showed us that in spades.
Exactly. So. Which the way the Democrats are trying to sell this is that this is all about undermining are disenfranchising the minority vote, mm-hmm. or the Black vote, or the Hispanic vote. Yeah. Never mind, they seem to forget that especially Black males and Hispanics swung significantly towards Trump.
Trump.
So I don't think it's a crazy idea to do this redistricting.
No.
And interestingly, do you know who's like leading the charge right now?
Hold on. Leading the charge to find these rogue Democrats or leading the charge?
No, no, no. Leading the charge as to we're bolting out of the state and we're headed somewhere else.
Ooh, is it the guy we just talked about last week?
Yes.
Oh, yay.
Points get a
for
cookie.
Me. Points for me.
Gold stars. Gold stars.
Yep. He had a statement that I will share with everyone so everybody understands exactly what their goals are and what their mm-hmm. concerns are.
This is State Representative James Tallarico from Texas. If you're seeing this video, my Democratic colleagues and I have just left our beloved state to break quorum and stop Trump's redistricting power grab. Trump told our Republican colleagues to redraw the political maps here in Texas in the middle of the decade to get him five more seats and protect his majority in Congress. They're turning our districts into crazy shapes to guarantee the outcome they want in the 2026 elections. If this power grab succeeds, they will hang on to power without any accountability from the voters. But Texas Democrats are fighting back. We're leaving the state, breaking quorum, and preventing Republicans from silencing our voices and rigging the next election. We are not fighting for the Democratic Party. We are fighting for the democratic process. And the stakes could not be higher. We have to take a stand.
Wow, so
you think
brave.
He's running for federal so office one
yeah,
day?
Exactly. So brave. This is his Vietnam. He's just really like...
It's just like
he's oh my like, gosh. This is what What's so doing? Funny too, it's like if this redistricting goes forward and Republicans get more votes, they will be unaccountable to the voter. It's like, well, but the voters voted for them if they make it into office. So what are you talking about?
Also, he was like, and they're making these crazy shapes to, and I'm like, hello,
what?
This is the state. This is the state that you've run to right now.
I just want to be, this is why I want to be
refuge.
This is why I want to be an actual on the ground reporter one day, just maybe for like 1 year, so I can follow around people with like maps and whiteboards when they say something, be like, but wait, what about this? Because they don't ever have to confront that in these pre-prepared statements that they, you know, they pop off on and then they put it on socials and all of these youngsters are like, oh my gosh, yeah, good point. Without understanding how it's always been done. I'm not saying I like gerrymandering and all of these, this redistricting, but to act like this is a novel idea, that this is the first time that this has ever happened, is silly. And he knows it, but you know, he's got to read his script, be a good boy, because he wants well, he's moving on
for,
up.
He's gonna run federal for yeah. sure. Like I am
for sure.
I will put money on it now. Yeah. I for just so you guys, in addition to all of this happening, you have Democrat governors that are throwing their weight around. Of course, mm-hmm. governor of Illinois holds a press conference, tells all of these little Texas Democrats, please come to me. I will protect you from the big bad Republicans. And Hochul or Hochul? How do you pronounce her last name?
I always say Hochul, Kathy Hochul.
Okay. So Governor Hochul from New York put out a statement also where she was alluding to considering, in order to combat the redistricting that is happening in Texas, to do like a special legislation or a special session to see if they can do it in New York. However, there's a bunch of other restrictions that would really limit her capabilities of being able to do that. And by the time it actually happened, we would probably be past the midterms.
Okay.
But she has some words that she would like to share with the group on her feelings on what is happening. Are you freaking kidding me? I also don't have that clip. I was like preparing ahead of time, but that did not work. But she also kind of doubled down into the, what was it? Like what you were saying. 'Cause the talking point is they're not playing fair and we've been playing fair.
Oh,
and
course.
We've had yeah. our hands tied, and this is really unfair for us to have our hands tied. So honestly, we shouldn't have to, we can't play this game their way because they're not honest. brokers.
Okay.
And I'm just thinking to myself, I feel like that is not accurate.
Of course not.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like we see evidence of that not being the case, considering, especially if you go to gerrymandering.princeton.org, I think it is, it's a map that gives you, you know, what states are the most gerrymandered.
Yeah.
And yes, they rank, for example, Florida and Texas, but then they also have Illinois and New York. You know what I mean? So, like, it's just, again, this, like, pearl clutching and morality, like a how dare you, as if it doesn't go both ways.
People don't buy it. They don't.
I want to play something for you, and I actually have this one.
Can't wait.
This is – so the Democrats got together, right, and they hold a press conference. And Jasmine Crockett, because she's from the state of Texas
– right. Also, is this the one where she cusses?
Yeah. No, I think she speaks firmly, but what is embarrassing is that she is trying to end the press conference because she wants to be the final, like the closer. And it, anyways, let me play it.
Well, doesn't go well for her.
We're done. On their names, I appreciate y'all. Is it?
Oh, is that closer?
Oh, we're done. We're done. That's what it says.
We were supposed to have Ron close, do the closing. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Sorry.
Embarrassing. That's awkward. That's awkward. She is so awkward. She is so ungraceful. When it comes to just like cues, how you should carry yourself and handle yourself in these types of situations. I know she thinks she's hood and it's like all very, you know, like it's, she's cool, you know, and nobody can clap back at her and all that stuff, but it's unattractive and nobody likes it. We talked about this last week. It's not.
I just thought it was funny because she's just like, I'm important. I'm the final speaker. We're done. Let's move on. Let's not talk about it.
And even they, who are these people? No one knows who they are. And even they were like, no, stop. You're not the boss of me. That's great. I love it.
Speaking of press conferences, I want to wrap us up with a press conference. This is going to be short, but I think it matters because Elizabeth Warren, which is a senator from Massachusetts, mind you, had a press conference with Democrat, and I'm air quoting Democrat because this man is not a Democrat, candidate Zora Mandani of New York City. So they held a press conference together in New York, and Elizabeth Warren gave her full-throated endorsement of Mamdani.
Okay, great.
let's hear her speak.
When someone stands up and says, I will lead this city by making it more affordable. And here are my plans, real plans, plans to deliver on childcare, plans to deliver on housing, plans to deliver. We're going to experiment. We're going to try things on groceries. That is the Democratic message.
So she is suggesting that the Democratic message aligns with Mandani.
Can I just say real quick something about our friend, Elizabeth Warren? She has great skin. I think it every single time I see her. I mean, like, what, say what you will about her policy.
Oh my God. So, cause you're looking at that and you're thinking she has great skin. And I had a thought the first time I watched it, which I DM'd you, and I was like, this looks like the beginning of a joke. An African American and a Native American walk out to a press conference.
And then the New York Post ran with that headline.
And then the New York Post freaking stole my joke. Look, they put it on their front page. I was like,
but I mean, look at her skin. She's older lady, and she, whatever she uses to moisturize, I mean, it's good.
I mean, yeah, I guess I'll give it to you, you know, for,
but yes, you're right. This is hilarious that Elizabeth Warren is now saying the new Democratic way is, and what the party should adopt are these, just because someone has a new idea doesn't make it a good one. She's like, well, he's coming up with some new stuff. And it's like, yeah, but it's all horribly, it's awful. It's not good policy. It's going to fail. Like, just because something's new, it doesn't mean it's innovative. It doesn't mean it's going to work or benefit the voter.
Well, I mean, it might be innovative, but I don't know if it's the, like, to the positive. You know what I mean?
I mean, I guess when I say innovative, there has to be some sort of level of success. And I just don't think his policies are going to reach that, but we'll see.
Well, what's concerning right now is the numbers, the polling numbers right now in New York.
He sits at 50%. Yeah.
He's over 50. He's just over 50% right now.
Yeah, he's winning. He's winning.
Which is not great, concerning. Yeah. It's also wild to think that the financial capital of the United States, and I would argue the world, would be like, yeah, that's the guy that we should vote for, for mayor.
Yep,
like,
that sounds
like a great idea. And she's going hard for him. I saw an interview where she was some financial program. I can't remember off the top of my head. But the host there was challenging her and saying, okay, so you raise all these taxes and you create all these programs. Who's going to pay for them? Because if you're just going to raise the taxes on the people who innovate, create business, have ideas, what's going to end up happening is that they're going to leave the state. And then that money is no longer there. It's gone. What are you going to do, like, once they leave? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she just doubled down on her ideas. She was like, I think, you know, this is, you know, innovative. This is where it's at. This is where the Democrat. And she actually was asked, do you think this is where the Democratic Party should be? And she was like, yes. Period. End of sentence. And I'm just like, this is wild. Now, mind you, did you happen to catch the clip of this Democrat socialist organization guy where he was talking about how he has the ear of Mondani and that what their plans are for trans healthcare, and I'm air quoting healthcare,
I think
in the state of New York?
Yeah, I saw a little bit of that, but to me it all just sounds like the rest of the Democrat platform that caused them to lose in 2024.
Well, and that's the thing that I don't understand. But the whole idea, this person, may not misquote them, so let's go and see what they have to say.
Zoran is literally attempting to do what conservatives say, you know, we want to do, which is provide gender-affirming care to anyone who wants it for free, and we're going to, like, ship people, we're going to fly people in and pay for their hotel rooms, and we're going to do all of the, like, Fox News stuff. Like, we're getting ideas from Fox News. I want to, do that. But most importantly is we collaborated with the Zoran Mamdani campaign on his trans rights platform. And what we explicitly wanted to do was use the power of New York City to provide free gender-affirming care, and I say free, in case insurance companies decide to boot us off, free gender-affirming care, not just to people in New York City, but across the country.
When Zoran first approached...
Who's paying for
it? Well, the New York taxpayer. It's free. So obviously it's going to be in the New York taxpayer. It's not going to be anybody who runs a business who decides to leave the city. That's not who's going to pay for it. Like, this is such a bad idea that even Bill Maher... on an episode, I was watching him, and he was like, this guy, if he wins in New York, you're guaranteeing that every Republican wins from here on out for the next decade or more. Because they're going to see what is happening in New York, and they're going to be like, I don't want to have anything to do with that. And so we're going to dip out, and we're not going to have anything to do with it, and we're going to make sure that we vote a Republican in. And it's just wild to me that it kind of brings in with what the Democrats in Texas are freaking out about. And it's actually something that I wrote about, because they're still playing this identity politics. They're playing politics from the mindset of identity politics, of race-based politics, and are completely unwilling to recognize that perhaps things are changing, and that people, just because they share a culture or a skin color, are no longer a monolith. And that doesn't mean that they have to vote for you or that they're going to vote for you. And so continuing to double down on this type of identity politics,
Although I will say this, like, someone said to me, I don't know why you're getting so upset about Mamdani. Like, he'll just be awful. His policies will fail and they'll vote him out and people are going to be tired of it. And I'm like, okay, but I come from a state called California, where the policies are awful and elected officials have ruined large swaths of that once beautiful state, and they continue to get elected over and over and over again, and they're running the state into the ground and people just keep electing him. So I don't necessarily know if it's true that like he can just get in there and he'll be awful and people will wise up and be like, no, because if California is a test case, they just keep voting in the same people, the same with the same rhetoric and the same policies over and over and over and over again. And then people are confused as to why things are happening there the way that they're happening. And so I don't know if
it does spread. It may not spread to the level of like California, New York, but it does spread. It does influence, you know, and I, you know, just to be like, you know, yeah, I also have the same thought. Like they're going to tank so bad. If anything, it's going to be a case study for like what not to do.
Well,
but I don't know.
California's
some people
been a
like
case study for 15, 20 years. So I don't know.
All right. So before we wrap us up, I have some little headlines that I want to mention to you and I just want your immediate reaction on them.
Okay, go.
All right. So word on the street is that our secretary, the Department of Transportation, who actually also happens to head up, I believe, Space Force, if I'm not mistaken, is considering like they're amping up to build a nuclear reactor on the moon.
Why?
Don't know.
That's my reaction.
That's the headline. My first thought is like, por qué? Why?
Yeah. Why?
Why? Because how come?
I don't.
Also, why? I didn't realize that we claim the moon? Is the moon ours? Can we just like throw a nuclear reactor up there?
Well, I mean, I'm sure Trump's like, it's ours, obviously. But I don't know why. I need to look that up. I need
details. I saw this headline and I was like, I need details on this. Yeah. Are we shuttling nuclear power from the moon to the United States?
Are we going there routinely enough to where we're like, you know what we need is a nuclear reactor? That sounds about right.
I am as confused as you are.
Okay, give me the next one. Give me the next one.
So this broke right before we got on. Bill and Hillary Clinton and former AGs and FBI directors have been subpoenaed before the House Oversight Committee on Jeffrey Epstein.
Great. Can't wait.
Also,
I want to see him walking into that grand jury room. That's what I want. I want the photo op.
I read a rumor, CNN reporting, that they're considering publishing the transcript.
Yes, I heard.
Of Ghislaine Maxwell. Yeah, where she did the interview recently with the DOJ. It was like a two-day interview. Mm-hmm. So
do it.
Maybe?
Release it. Great.
I don't know. Then the Department of Homeland Security, for like a hot minute, proposed withholding FEMA from states that boycotted Israel.
Absolutely not. Yeah, that is unconstitutional. I hate it. No.
I can't even comprehend the logic.
Well, and then people came, all these like MAGA influencers, like, they're like, look, it was removed. And I mean, because it was actual wording in official federal documents, because people are like, you're lying. I'm like, no, I'm not.
No,
it was there. And so all these influencers then are all excited that it was removed, because it was removed. Caroline Levitt like retweeted people who were like, see, look, they've changed it. Which, by the way, just now on X, a huge account that I follow said it's actually online, not been removed. But I'm going to have to confirm that. But so all these influencers like, oh, see, it's no big deal. It's been removed. I'm like,
it should have been there in the first place.
No. Very, very bad. Hate it. Don't like it. Unconstitutional. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. No. Sorry.
I was like, excuse? Me?
No. Are you kidding? You remember? I'm going to start getting angry. Move on. Next one.
Okay, the last one is probably going to annoy you. So apparently, Sydney Sweeney is a Republican, and that is news.
I mean, great. I don't care.
Look. This is my thing. Because first of all, when was it? Yesterday, I was talking with my husband. I'm like, I am so sick and like, we are 2 weeks
sick of
into
the Sweeney. I'm sick of the Sweeney story.
Sweeney news cycle.
Well, anything that the Democrats can talk about in order to get all eyes off of Texas people hopping on planes and leaving, and to get no one talking about Bill and Hillary being complicit in the Epstein story and Russiagate and everything else, they'll talk about it.
Oh, forever. And also, by the way, they're still questioning people on the AutoPen Biden cognitive decline.
Yeah, nobody's even talking about that anymore.
I am on my side. I'm about to do
you
an
and
article.
I are. That's right. But like people that are not like us, they're not talking about it.
Like they've had like six people, I think,
come, some voluntarily, some had to be subpoenaed. About three of them have pled the fifth. The other ones have been somewhat cooperative, but they're all saying, like, he was fine. He could have won the election.
Whatever. He couldn't have. Okay. And neither could Kamala. And that's why she lost.
So, but apparently my issue with,
I don't think anybody cares. I really don't. I think the only people who care about the Sydney Sweeney thing are the really, truly unhinged white liberal women.
Yes.
And some of the minority women that have been hoodwinked into thinking everything in everywhere and all of the world is about racism. I really
everything
don't think
is racist.
People, I don't think anybody really cares. It, really, the biggest lunatics are the, like, college educated 40 something white women. Those ladies are out to lunch and they are up on the socials crying and talking about how we need to educate ourselves. It's like a flashback to 2020 when everybody was telling me as a white woman I needed to read like Robin DiAngelo and like manage my white fragility. That same kind of thread is happening right now. It's the same vibe and nobody cares. I guarantee there are people of all nationalities and all political stripes that are buying American Eagle jeans because they just look cute.
Their stock is up.
I should have bought stock the day that whole controversy happened. I should have known better. That's what I should have done.
You should have bought up that stock immediately.
Yes.
Dang it. But I think, to me, it's just, again, it was like when this first broke, and I think I sent it to you, I was like, it was BuzzFeed that broke the story reporting on it. I'm like, okay, 2020 wants their drama back. Are you kidding
seriously,
me?
Seriously, nobody
cares. This is what we're going to do right now. You are trying so hard to cancel this woman. Yeah. That is over with. And I'm like, congratulations to American Eagle for not responding. Double congratulations to Sydney Sweeney
for
living her life and not caring.
Yep.
So good. I'm totally fine with this entire, and I'm actually done with it, but I only wanted to mention it to you because I'd like to irritate you.
And I know, and you did. Thank you so much. Between that and a stupid nuclear reactor on the moon and then dumb all of it withholding FEMA. Get out of here.
So what is this? Trump made a okay, this is old. I thought this was new. I was like, oh, did we have some breaking news? But no.
That's it's old. Always fun when that happens sometimes.
I know. So any other thoughts, concerns, opinions, news that I have missed?
I mean, yeah, but I can't, I don't know. I'm getting
Please
hungry.
Don't start telling me about like nuclear reactive
wasp nest?
Hornets
you,
or whatever.
See, you're still thinking about it. You're still thinking about it. That was, it was exciting. It was exciting. Yo, you know what I'll do? I'm going to give you a on this day in history because I think that you like it, right? Okay, great.
Yes. Yeah, I know
even
you
if
want
you
to.
Don't, even if you don't.
Just let's do a day in history.
Okay,
and
here we go.
We,
got to bounce. Okay. All right. Today in, let's see, August 5th. Which one should I read? I mean, they're all so interesting. they are. They really are. Oh, let's do. Well, today in 1305. The Scottish patriot, Sir William Wallace, was captured by the English near Glasgow, and he was later executed for high treason, becoming a martyr for Scottish independence. So if you're looking for something to do tonight, that's the first thing I think of, which is so sad. It's just like, oh, Mel Gibson.
That scene in Braveheart is brutal.
Oh, my gosh. Go watch Braveheart tonight, guys. I watched that movie in the movie theater with my dad and my brother, and my dad notoriously has a really weak stomach. Like, things make him like nauseous, right? Uh-huh. And my parents talk about, like, remember last week when we were talking about how some parents just let you watch things a little too young? I think I was maybe, I don't know, maybe 14 or 15. And my brother was almost 3 years younger than me. So he was definitely too
young. Because like 14, 15 is pushing it, but it's not that horrible.
No, my brother was like 10. And we were sitting in there. And so at the end of the scene, sorry if this is a spoiler, but really the movie's been out for like 1,000 years. at the end of the movie, they draw and quarter him. So he's being like pulled apart limb by limb. And my dad, upon the scene, you know, the scene is growing and it's about to happen. And my dad's like, I need to leave. I feel ill. I feel nauseous. I need to go. So he leaves the movie theater. It says, I'll meet you outside. And me and my young brother are inside the movie theater watching William Wallace be torn apart by all these horses and ropes screaming. And it's like, great. So that's my memory. That's what I thought of when I read today's On This Day in History. Factoid. So there you go.
Oh my gosh.
It's a great night to watch Braveheart. Great night.
It is a fabulous movie.
I highly recommend. But maybe not for your 10-year-old and your 14-year-old. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we could end on a note of being drawn and quartered.
I know. Sorry. Sorry, not star. Hey, it's not as bad as last week. The nuclear loss.
Actually, we got a few comments where like people were like, Rachel, what is your deal?
I'm all about history, guys. Come on.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button so you don't miss another episode. We are here every Tuesday and Thursday. If you want bonus episodes and ad-free episodes, and if you want to watch this video, please consider becoming a paying supporter. There is a link in the show notes with a 30% discount, too. So now is the time to sign up. Also, we got a link to merch, links, go check out our Substacks, our individual Substacks, and follow us on Instagram because that's where it's at. That's it. That's all we have. Here's a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Yay! Okay, bye!
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.